Romans 12 ends in verse 21 with, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And straight on he says, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. Hello, we're looking at Romans chapter 13, and it's a controversial, difficult passage, because in this passage, Paul says that human or governing authorities are appointed by God and we should obey them. And that does not sit well with the hearing of many people today, and perhaps it never has. And I wonder how it felt for the Christians in Rome when they first received this letter. Because we know well that, if not actually at this time, then not long after, the Roman authorities were arresting Christians and throwing them into the arena to be mauled by lions to the great roar and cheers of the baying mob, the crowd that came for the spectacle. And Paul is saying, everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good, I think is the context that we need to read chapter 13 in. Because the fact that he's actually just said that and now he's talking about these authorities, I think means he recognizes that governing authorities, human governing authorities, may well be evil. And we are not to be overcome by evil, but to overcome evil with good. And so what he's saying is, if they are acting in a way which is not godly, you defeat them by acting back in a godly manner. But let's unpack it a little bit more, because it doesn't sound like that particularly as we go on. And let's start with the fact that he says, there is no authority except that which God has established. God is the authority. Jesus is the King of Kings. And therefore, every sub-king, every king and president and national ruler, local authority, is under the King. And that reminds me of the coronation service in 2023. Where the king, King Charles, took the authority and committed himself to be under God and recognized that his authority comes from God. When Her Majesty the Queen died, the mace, the crown, were placed back on the table at the front of the church, given back to God. She had carried it on his behalf. And at the coronation, the king is given those things back. In the intervening period, from that funeral to that coronation, he was an uncrowned king. It's a bit like, I guess, you're engaged to be married, but you're not yet married. You are committed to that person. You are set apart for that person, but you're not yet married. He was engaged to be the ruler in God's place, in the authority, in the domains, in the realms of which he is king, but he had not yet received the mantle. But that picture is of this authority comes from God. And I know we are pretty unique among the nations in that we still do that and we still have that picture. But that was what it was like everywhere, and it is still visibly what it's like here. Our constitution is about that coronation service and his authority, which he then shares with Parliament, comes from God. And I love the fact that as he walked out of the Abbey, the leaders of the British Muslims and the British I can't remember if it was the Sikhs or the Hindus or other religions, acknowledged him as their sovereign, and he had just acknowledged Jesus as his sovereign. And I love that. I love that picture that they may not recognize Jesus, but they have just bowed down to him in that very, very symbolic way. So the authorities on earth are established by God because he is the only authority. And any rule on earth is permitted by him. He established the authority on earth in Genesis when he said to the man and the woman, "You will have dominion on earth. I give you dominion on this earth. I have the ultimate authority. I give to you the dominion on earth." And we know the story. We know that dominion was abrogated by the devil, but it's an authority that God established. And whoever has that is there because God has established it, and God allows its continuation as such at this time. And the gospel, with Jesus redeeming the world and bringing it back into his control, is a marvelous story. And although we do not yet see the fullness of it, that is the picture, that he is the King of Kings. He is the one on the highest throne, the highest mountain, and every knee in heaven and on earth will bow before him. That's what it means that all authority is established by God. The Genesis picture shows us that even though God established that authority, actually it's been taken by the enemy. And although Jesus has brought it back and won it back, there are still large pockets where the enemy holds sway until he is finally dealt with. Verse 1 finishes with, "The authorities that exist have been established by God." And so as we look around our world, whether that's to Russia and the way the president of Russia is conducting himself, whether it's even to Israel and the way the prime minister and the government of Israel are conducting themselves, whether it's even to Gaza and the way Hamas is conducting itself, or to any other place, let us not forget they are only in authority because that authority has been delegated by God to man, and Jesus has brought it back from the devil. As a man, he brings it back from the devil. We should be giving it down to him, laying it down before him, as symbolically it happens in the coronation, and not that the government follows that at all. That's a totally different story. But symbolically, that's what happened. And we should be saying, "We will do it your way." That's the starting point. Verse 2. "Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves." Let's not forget that Paul is writing in the Roman Empire. Let's not forget that there was nothing godly about Caesar at the time this was written. There was nothing godly about the way the Roman Empire conducted itself. It wasn't for Jesus in any sense, and became very anti-Christian before the reign of Constantine. Yet he still writes, "He who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted." And we can see in Paul's own life, he never rebelled against Pilate. Well, it wasn't Pilate, sorry. He never rebelled against the Roman authorities. He said, "I appeal to you in the name of the Roman law. I want to appeal to Caesar. I want to use the Roman authority to advance the kingdom. He was not a rebel against the human authorities. So that's something to think about. How can we bring God's kingdom, the kingdom reign of Jesus, without rebelling against a godless human authority that may be above us? How can we do how chapter 12 ends, overcome evil with good? Verse 3, rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Really, Paul? Have you not heard of what goes on in places like China, where godly ministers who are feeding the poor and looking after the sick and preaching the gospel are arrested, put in prison, and often tortured? I'm not saying all of that happens in China, but in different regimes across the world at different times, there's been persecution by the human authorities in place, and you're saying they hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. How do we reconcile that statement with what we see? He goes on, do you want to be free from the fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you. And I think there is something in here where we need to look at the life of Joseph in Genesis. Because you see, he did what was right. He fled from that woman, Potiphar's wife. He did not lie with her. He did not give in to the temptation for sex with her. He honored his master and he got out of the situation. He did what was right and he was thrown into prison for it. What did he do in prison? He did what was good. He did what was right. And he was commended and he was given roles and he was given trust and he was given positions of influence within the prison. Because he didn't fight. He just did it God's way. And he treated even his oppressors, even his jailers, with honour. And I think that's what it's saying here. It's not saying you won't be persecuted. It's not saying these authorities will not come down on you like a ton of bricks and you might even be tortured and you might even be killed. Paul was put in prison for doing right. He is a person who lived through all of these things, and we need to look at his life to see how he reconciled this. I think of the story in Acts when there was the earthquake and the chains fell off and the jailer was going to kill himself. And he said, no, we haven't run away. We've been set free by God, but we're still here. We want to be officially released. And that's part of the picture, isn't it? That we continue to do things God's way and overcome the evil with good. Some will do that through their own death. That's what martyrdom and sacrifice is about. You overcome evil by sticking to God's way, and that might be horrendous, but it will be part of the kingdom's advance, how you overcome evil. Verse 4 says that this ruler is God's servant to do you good. So now actually what he's doing is saying, do you know what? That ruler is accountable to God. And if that ruler does evil, then he is God's servant, and it is God that is going to judge him, try him, and deal with him. It's not for you to do it. He is God's servant, and God will sort it out. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. So if you've done wrong, then the ruler can do whatever he likes to you. You know, okay. In the 21st century, in the West, there are all sorts of things they have decided they will not do. In this country, you will not be put to death, whatever you do. Again, we could have a whole discussion about that one. But that's the case here in Britain. But suppose we lived somewhere else and you have offended, then the ruler has every right, if you have broken the law, to enact the punishments that are written down in the statute book for you. In the past, there wasn't a statute book. He could do whatever he wanted on the day. But if you have not done wrong, and he does that, he is God's servant, and God is watching out. Verse 5, therefore it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. And this, I think, is the key. Our conscience is between us and the Holy Spirit. Am I living according to how the Holy Spirit would have me live? Am I living according to the guidelines of the Holy Spirit? Now, we get to that point about what if the government is saying do something which the Holy Spirit is saying don't do? Well, you follow your conscience, you follow the guidelines of the Holy Spirit, because our government might be failed. It might be wrong. It's still put in authority position by God. That authority is established by God. They are failing to enact it well. God is watching them. They will be held to account for what they do. You need to keep your conscience with the Holy Spirit clear. And sometimes that will mean you say, I will not do what the government has told me to do. But the key here is we're not to rebel. He who rebels, verse 2, is rebelling against what God has instituted. We can disobey without rebellion. We can explain. We can say, I can't do that and I won't do that because this is what God says. Rebelling is, I think, a little bit more like, I won't do it and I'll work against you and I'll destroy you. And it's becoming dangerous. We can simply say, I will do this and this and this, but I won't do that. Again, we may well be led down the path towards the execution. But we're called to do what God says. And we're called to take those authorities and recognize them as God's. And I think if we just took that little thought, we recognize the authorities over us as God's, whether that's national, local, employment, parental. It's God has instituted that authority. And I think that's a key thing, because as we look at the rebellion in our world, it is against authority in every shape and form. The enemy is trying to destroy the idea that there can be authorities. I shudder to think what will happen in a general election if a party gets in that a significantly loud minority refuse to accept. I think we've come close to it when we're looking at what goes on in many countries in our world. Rebellion against authority is rife, and democracy can only survive because of Christian doctrine of obeying the authorities. Without that, you need a harsh regime to keep you in line. And if we don't obey authorities, that has to be what we end up with. The rebellion against authority in our society and our culture comes from the enemy who rebelled against God. And we need to overcome it by doing good to overcome evil, and by demonstrating as God's people that we respect the authority. We may not have voted for it. We may not like its policies. We may be against its policies. But we respect it because it is the authority there over us. He then breaks that down and goes a little bit into more detail. And we'll just take the next little bit. That's why you pay taxes. Don't rebel against paying taxes. Give everyone what you owe him. If it's tax, tax. Revenue, revenue. Respect, respect. Honour, honour. Respect, honour those who are in authority and pay the taxes. There are lots of taxes we don't like. There are lots of taxes which are probably inherently wrong. But we should pay them because we want to be seen as upstanding citizens in our society and overcoming any evils by doing good. So in this, Paul is saying, you do not rebel against the society, against the government that is over you. You serve it and you follow the Holy Spirit. And if that's attention, then I think we start by saying, Lord, I will follow you and I will obey you and I will in conscience do what you say. But recognizing that part of what he says is we do not rebel against the authorities established by God. And we hold that intention and we keep that as the principle by which we deal with all the society issues we come across.